And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, I understand you're down at the in Philadelphia at the Phillies game, and your attitude is that the Phillies fans are better organized than the Democrats.
Yeah. Is that surprising? Is that surprising?
Well, you know, just about 100 years ago, a famous American satirist at the time, Will Rogers, said, I don't belong to any organized political party. I'm a Democrat.
And he could have said that today just as well. Just as well. It seems to be genetic, you know. It's in their DNA that we don't follow organization very well, that we sort of lurch from election to election, hoping for someone to rise up like an FDR or a JFK or a Clinton or an Obama that'll get everybody excited enough to win something, and then no follow-up, so to speak.
Well, but in that list, FDR got elected 4 times.
Yes.
But it wasn't because of FDR.
No.
There was a huge social movement.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, there's the failure of the Republicans and the huge economic dislocation caused by the crash.
But we have an economic dislocation, and we don't have the same thing because we don't have the same social movement. We don't have the union movement. We don't have anything like that. We don't have a vibrant left wing, really, that does movement organizing for progressive demands.
Well, we
do have inequality.
Yeah. The other thing that we've had now is this organized communications network that has over time worked on people and figured out how to get people to vote against their own economic interest. The What's the Matter with Kansas group and the MAGA group. They've been able to capitalize by defining the problem and then offering the wrong solutions, but getting people to accept the wrong solutions because they present other aspects of their program that appeal to these people.
Well, that's the historic role of populism in American politics. Populism has always been a movement that points to real problems that American working people have and produce solutions that can't benefit working people or overcome the problem, but which sound good because they attack the enemy. In the 1890s, as far as the farmers were concerned, the agrarian workers and the small farmers, the small landowners, it was the case that banks were kicking them off the land, foreclosing on their loans, because that's how capitalism works. Populism said, no, it's not capitalism that's the problem. It's these rapacious bankers. But there is no such thing as a non-rapacious banker. A banker is a banker. If you have banking as a private enterprise, as a way to make money off of lending money, anybody who manages that system has to operate the same way. But the populace didn't say that. The populace said, no, it's this banker or that banker or the other banker. The same way with the populace in the South, appealing to the white workers. They pointed out that the poverty of the white workers in the Depression era was the fault of black workers, not the fault of the people who owned the cotton mills, not the people who owned the land, not the racists. No. It was the black workers. They were the problem.
Yeah.
Same thing with MAGA. The problem, you have inequality. It's not that we have now more billionaires than ever before. It's not that the enormous growth of production, 80% of it flowed to 1 or 2% of the population. It's because we have Mexican immigrants.
Right. I mean, they've been able to convince people that the problem is the welfare queen, rather than the guy who's lobbying Congress to transfer all the wealth upwards.
Exactly. But the thing is, that works only when there isn't a left wing that says, no, the problem is, that's the problem, all right, but that's not the solution. If MAGA says that's the problem and here's the solution, and the Democrats, who are the leaders of the opposition, don't recognize that problem and talk about something else or even defend the thing that's the problem, MAGA has to win.
Well, the question is, or the issue is, the Democrats, or at least they're portrayed as becoming beholden to the same elites that are lobbying Congress and pushing the money upwards.
And they are, aren't they?
Well, yes and no. I mean, at least the trend was slowed, if not modestly reversed, under Clinton and under Obama, but not to the extent that it cured the issue, because the right wing is so much better organized that they just keep doubling down and coming back over and over and over again.
To me, the whole issue is, if the Democrats don't tackle racism with anti-racism, if the Democrats don't tackle anti-immigration with pro-immigration, the people can't benefit and the Democrats must lose. It's just that simple. And there's no evidence to me that the mainstream leaders of the Democratic Party are prepared to do that.
Well, the other thing is, they have to do it in a way that appeals to people.
Well, that's true, but they have to want to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a real excuse to say, oh, there's no real way to do it. There is a real way to do it. Of course there's a real way to do it.
Yeah.
But if you don't defend unions, there's really no way to fight inequality in income distribution. Because if you, in this society, every section, every interest group has to be organized politically. That's two aspects. You have to be organized, and you have to be organized politically. Otherwise, you can't, there's no balance in the market. If the employers have all the power and the labor power doesn't have any political power, there's no balance in that negotiation. There's no negotiation. There's no balance.
Yeah. Well, don't forget, organized labor, so to speak, has a couple of issues. One is, there is a gap between the leadership and the rank and file, and there are different priorities of different unions. The building trades union has different priorities than the municipal unions or the teachers unions. And even within the teachers unions, you have the tension between the NEA and the AFL, or the AFT, the American Federation of Teachers. So
you may be right. All that's true. But the main important thing is, 94% of the employed people who work for private industry are not organized into any union.
Right.
So there's no, it's not that they, that those unions have issues with each other. There are no unions in those areas. There's no issue about migrants coming into this country and undercutting American workers if everybody belongs to a union and the union makes sure that everybody gets the same pay. That you've eliminated that issue. And if that's the issue and you've eliminated that issue, that's the end of the right-wing demagogy. And nothing else does it. Nothing else does it. So you say, well, then they'll take their investments abroad, somewhere abroad. That's a separate issue. That's a different matter.
Yeah.
Well, that's also solvable by organizing unions in other countries.
Well, yeah. Which
by the way, they exist.
Difficult.
They do. It's not so difficult.
But Trump's approach, what MAGA perceives is, we're going to prevent people from taking jobs abroad. We're going to make it economically, or at least perceived to be not economically feasible to do that. But that's almost impossible, because with the prices that would that'll occur, you know, American labor isn't going to work for 50 cents an hour.
That's right. Is that A and B, you may prevent Americans from getting jobs abroad, but you're not attempting to prevent American capital from investing abroad where the rate of profit is higher. Capital is international. Capital moves where it wants to move. Only labor is not allowed to move. So what is an American company? What is a Chinese or a French or a German company? If an Irish company, Apple is an Irish company. It's headquartered in Ireland. It's the, you know, pays its taxes in Ireland. It declares its profits in Ireland. Is Apple an Irish company?
And there are 50 people working for them there.
Yeah. It's not at all an Irish company, but no. Legally it's an Irish company.
Because they've been able to get Congress to allow them to do that.
Exactly. Precisely. And that is a benefit to the shareholders of Apple. And not a shareholder, and not a benefit to the people who work for Foxconn producing the Apple product in China.
Or the new ones that are going to be working for them in India.
Exactly. Precisely. So you got to be, if you want to fight this kind of thing, you got to know who you have to fight and what for. The fact of the matter is they've managed to destroy the labor movement's strength in private industry in America. It didn't happen overnight. It happened over from the period of 1946 to now.
Taft-Hartley.
Taft-Hartley in 1948, exactly. That's a long time, 50 or 60 years of effort that succeeded.
Jake, I keep repeating, what is Falk's rule number one?
Keep at it.
Think long term.
Yeah, exactly.
Of which keep at it is a subset.
Yeah, you know, but the Democrats don't think that way.
No, they start and they stop, and they start and they stop.
Because there's no they.
Right.
If you look at the statutes of the Democratic Party and the practices of the internal working of the Democratic Party, what does not exist is a forum for members to determine policy, to discuss policy. There is no such mechanism. It doesn't exist on any level.
All the policy is fundraising.
Yeah. That's right. And the actual policy is determined by whoever manages to become the candidate.
Right. And, of course, a lot of what the candidate, you know, for instance, congressional, both the Senate and the House more so, is recruiting. Who they recruit. And what we have is really two systems. One is people just pop up because of their ego and say, I'm going to run. I think I can do this. Or they go out and they try to recruit a certain group. Like Rob Bresnahan was recruited to run against Matt Cartwright and proved successful.
But in that recruitment, and this is true for the Democrats as well as the Republicans, but it's especially true of the Democrats, the main thing that the recruiter wants to know of the potential candidate is, can you raise money?
That's exactly right. You've got to raise like $40,000 a day or something like that.
They don't ask, what's your policy? What's your program? What are you going to stand for? What's your strength in the community? What's your ties? Can you raise money? Well, that is not good enough. That is not good enough. And that is not democratic.
No. This should be the job of the party to raise the money, but to pick the right candidates. And then be able to distribute the money and expertise strategically. Every candidate's got their own political consultant, so to speak. And in some ways, maybe they should, because they might know the area better. You know, the late Jim McNulty or the late Ed Mitchell, Democratic consultants, knew the area a heck of a lot better than anybody coming in from Washington knew the area. We have this system of what we have.
But it goes even deeper than that, because you say, why would you want to run as a Democrat? What is it that the Democrats, what are you standing for? Why is it possible that a guy can run as a Democrat in one election and run as a Republican in another election, and it doesn't seem to matter? Is there no difference between the two parties in terms of who they represent, what they represent, what the image of the future they represent? There seems to be none.
Well, that is the cry of the populist, that we need someone who isn't one of the, that there is no difference between the Republican and Democratic Party. And that's why we need a third party or whatever. I mean, Musk is trying to capitalize on that idea. But you see that, and then it undermines, it's worked against the Democrats because the Republicans are more cohesive. So the populist or the people saying, hey, why should I come out and vote? The Republicans say, yeah, why should I come out and vote? But I'm going to come out and vote Republican. And that's a difference.
Now, you may laugh, but I think that brings you directly to the Jeffrey Epstein business.
Hey, I'll laugh.
And I'll tell you why.
Let's see this connection. Let's see.
I'll tell you why. Because Jeffrey Epstein was promoted by Trump as the example of a liberal Democrat who was a criminal and who was a predator and who used his connections in the Democratic Party to escape the crimes that he was committing by sexual crimes against young women and God knows what else, possibly espionage, who knows what else. But the point is he got away with it because he was politically connected. People who believed in the QAnon cult, and that grew, fastened on that. This guy Epstein and his shadowy supporters, protectors, enablers, they're the ones that the QAnon cult identified as the enemy of the people. And Trump, who exposed it all, was going to expose Jeffrey Epstein's background, the deep state controlled by Jeffrey Epstein's enablers. Jeffrey Epstein became the symbol of the deep state for the mass base of MAGA.
Yeah, this is where they coalesce, but the conspiratorial mind was there. It's been fostered
for years. But populism fosters the conspiratorial mind because populism denies that there is a structural element to society. For populism, it's always conspiratorial. It's always this bad guy or that bad group. Change the group, change the guy, you can keep the system.
Yeah, what was it that one political scientist wrote in the 60s about the, I'm trying to think the name of the article, basically the craziness of the American political, of certain elements of the American political system. It's on the tip of my tongue, but whatever. But but that used to be, a very disorganized minority. And what's happened since...
It's organized.
It's organized around the QAnon or whatever. But the big thing is Donald Trump was part of the Jeffrey Epstein class. Facts don't matter. He was able to point elsewhere to get people to focus not on him, but on the others there. He was able to cleverly say, "Hey, I'm an insider, so I know what's bad there, and by knowing what's bad, I can cure it." Exactly. That's what he said about taxes. I know the tax system, so I can be able to cure the inequities in it. Meanwhile, what he did was only reinforce the inequities in it.
That's right. But that's why this Epstein thing is important, because he promised, when we get into power, we expose all of this, we wipe these guys all out, and now he says there's nothing to expose. There's nothing here. And the people who flocked to him believing that there was something here and he was going to get rid of it and are now told by him there is nothing here, there's nothing to get rid of, are shocked. And that is a weak point in his coalition. That is a weak point, it's a horrible weakness. And you can see everybody from Marjorie Taylor Greene through these nutty podcasters and commentators, Laurel Loomer, all of these people are in a bind. They came to power parroting and really believing this QAnon bullshit and looking to him, and now he undermines it. I couldn't undermine it. You couldn't undermine it. Only he could undermine it, and he did undermine it. So to me, this, if politics is forming coalitions, and the job of opposing forces is to exploit the weakness in the opposing coalition, the Democrats now have an opportunity. The anti-Trump forces, the anti-MAGA forces have an opportunity that MAGA has given them because of the Jeffrey Epstein, the situation with that today.
Yeah. I don't deny what you're saying, but here's the problem. The MAGA people, even though this is out there, and the Republicans, there was polling that came out this week that Trump's approval rating within the Republican Party has gone up, despite this, not gone down.
It may be true, among the general people, the general public, it's gone down.
Yeah, well, because you have the independents and you have the people that left the Republican Party.
Exactly.
But the Trumpists will double and triple down.
They may double and triple down, but how many are there? 30% of the Republicans are Trumpists, but that's only 15% of the population of the, many of whom don't vote. But they have the support. Politics is to fight for the support of the population.
Yeah. And this is the thing that the Democrats have been unable to capitalize on. Because what happens is you get the hardcore doubling and tripling down, and even bringing out to vote members of the hardcore that didn't bother to vote because they said there's no reason to vote, they're all the same. But getting them to vote, all right? And then what's added to that are the Republicans who will stubbornly not vote Democratic. They are voting Republican just because they don't want Democrats for whatever variety of reasons there are.
That's so, right. You're right. But the Democrats don't need that many. And now, if you look at New York City, the New York Times ran a couple of articles, and the Washington Post ran a couple of articles this week about, you'll love this, the Trump-Mamdani voter. Is there such a thing? How many of them are there? How can they exist? And they go out and they interview people who voted for Trump, who voted for Mamdani, the socialist, Democratic socialist, who became the Democratic candidate for mayor because he won the primary in the New York primary just a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
This is exactly true. This shows the weakness of the MAGA coalition and the possibilities.
This is no different than the Bernie Trump voter.
That's exactly right. It's the same voter. It's the same voter.
10 years ago. Yeah, it's the same voter.
In my county here in Pennsylvania, which is a two-thirds Trump-supported county, it's two-thirds MAGA voter, one-third Democrat. The second most popular candidate in the election two elections ago was Bernie. It's a fact. How the vote was. That's a fact. These were Trump-Bernie voters.
If there's
a Trump-Bernie voters, then there's a way to break the Trump coalition.
The thing is that both the Trump and Bernie and Mamdani have all
Mamdani
have all successfully defined the problem, but they have different solutions to the problem.
Naturally, that's the whole point.
But the thing is that many of the people that vote are only voting on the fact that they've defined that they're buying into the definition of the problem and not into the solution that's being proposed.
Well, I'm not sure that's right, because Mamdani is saying, I want a cheaper city. I want rents to be controlled. I want I want child care to be free. And I want the part of the transportation system to be free. And I want food costs to be controlled. That's a solution. People are voting for that solution.
Yeah, but that's not the MAGA part of it.
No, that's not MAGA. That's the whole point. That's the opposite of MAGA. The MAGA is throw more money at more millionaires to make them billionaires. Somehow it'll trickle down. That's the MAGA solution. And that's the tension. That's what has to be emphasized.
Yeah, and that's what you're getting when you have the Wall Streeters and everybody saying, you tax the billionaires and they're going to leave New York.
Yeah, they're going to leave New York, but
and Wall Street, and you'll have Florida saying, "Move Wall Street to Florida, where we have a better tax situation."
That might happen. Yeah. Maybe that could happen, but in Pennsylvania, they're talking now about $95 billion investment in Pennsylvania to build gas-powered AI centers.
Right.
But, you know, if they did that, they can't move it. The natural gas doesn't exist in Florida. Yeah. It exists in Northeast Pennsylvania.
Right.
So,
Northeast and Western Pennsylvania.
But yeah, that's true. But mostly in Northeast.
But of course, the trick is heck going to bring any more people to Pennsylvania. You know, the population keeps declining.
And it won't bring more people because it doesn't produce jobs. Despite the fact that they say it'll produce jobs, the natural gas industry does not produce jobs. It's just that simple.
Well,
running these tech centers don't produce jobs.
Initially, they produce some construction jobs.
Yeah.
Construction jobs. But they go away.
Yeah, they go. That's exactly right.
They go away once the construction's done.
And you have to already be a construction worker to get the job.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that when we talk about the unions, the construction unions have different priorities than the other unions.
That's true. But the point is, in terms of the billionaires saying, give us what we want and guarantee it or we're moving. Not all billionaires can move because there's a lot of stuff that's in the ground and it can't be moved unless you figure out a way to float Pennsylvania out to that someplace else, which is not, you know.
Dave McCormick moved from Connecticut to Pennsylvania. Well, or maybe he didn't move, but he...
Yeah, maybe he didn't move.
He managed.
But he doesn't... His wealth depends on money. His wealth doesn't depend on owning an asset that's in the ground. So that's a problem.
That's also part of the long-term problem was that we've taken the percentage of the economy that's dependent on workers, labor, and shifted it to the financial industry. And the financial industry, and I had a long discussion this week about the hospitals. We don't have time to get into it here, but remember, their product is bottom line. That's their product. They don't produce healthcare. And that's why so much of the healthcare system in Pennsylvania is breaking down. They don't produce journalism or stories. That's why the newspapers are so terrible these days. Whatever they get their hands on, and you're going to see more of that in sports now that they're being allowed to own teams. They don't care about winning or losing. All they care about is getting people into the ballpark, paying their admission, buying merchandise, and whatever else happens.
But all capitalism is like that. Investors are interested in profit. Then they don't care how the profit gets produced.
Well, there are, that's the model, the Pittsburgh model, and those teams that aren't spending money. But there are owners like Steve Cohen with the New York Mets who will invest a lot of money in the team. Now, he hasn't been very successful in some of that, but because of ego. But that's a different situation.
Anyway, we can't go further on this. We're done.
Okay.
This is too interesting, and therefore you run out of time.
That's, of course. Of course.
But we'll let's continue this next week. This is not going away.
All right.
See you next week.
We'll see you next week, and I'll be back from Philly.
Good. Good. Better organized, I hope.
Okay. Take care.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.